Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Marine vet Rob Walsh about his book, The Winning Playbook. Then we'll meet Navy Captain and Gold Star Dad Lee Vincent. And we'll talk with Army vet Steve Rainwater. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Marine vet Rob Walsh. Rob is also a minister and has been in the financial industry for over 17 years. And he co-authored a book with Jonathan Scott, a 10-year veteran of the NFL. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, Danny.
Rob, start by sharing about your time in the Marines. When, why did you join? What'd you do?
Joined back in 1981. My year younger brother had gone in. My dad's a Korean vet, and I saw how proud my dad was of my brother, so I decided to go in. We were about a month apart in Paris Island. So not a great reason to go in, but absolutely life-changing. Then my youngest brother, five-year younger brother, was in the Marine Corps as well during Iraq. So that was why I went in. And then stayed about 4 years, extended for an extra year because I met who's my now wife of 35 years while I was in.
You know, I met mine while I was in the service. And most people join because of family relations. Our family does this kind of thing. So it sounds like you're horribly normal.
Go figure.
And you're a minister. Has faith always been a big part of your life?
You know, it wasn't for a long period in the early, you know, kind of early stages. But I think back in late 90s and December 19th, I actually was kind of at a rock bottom point in my life and ended up getting saved and later on moved to San Jose and ended up becoming a minister on staff at a church over there. And so I was there for about 9 years on staff. And I think outside of that, too, I find people come to me for prayer anyways. You know, I'm just a vessel. I'm a tool for that.
You know, I tell everybody we're all in the army of God. In the army of God, there are two ranks, King of Kings and Lord of Lords and private. So you know your rank and just do your job.
Yes.
Okay. And take a minute and talk about your financial business.
Yeah. So we've actually evolved and I've learned over the years, probably over 17 years in the financial industry, getting in at 43 with a couple 20-year-olds recruiting me, really learning, educating. That was the main goal, not selling. And moved to Dallas 5.5 years ago. And I just surround myself with people that are kind of, they're smarter than me and they have different experiences in other areas, led us to where we are today. We basically deal more with what's called capital markets, private investment banking activities. We do a lot of stuff with, you know, you created programs for people that, you know, that don't have 100 million or more. Plus we do a lot of funding of 10 million or more projects. We're very diverse. So the things that if there was a bank that didn't have an investment banking division, we would be that attachment. But also we do help people. We're creating a division right now that will do policies and help. But the difference being in the industry, we educated. It was a game changer. I ask you questions you don't know, then it's just, you know, it kind of opens people's eyes up. The book is really, that's the key to the book.
You know, that's exactly right. The questions that you tell people they need to ask is what makes your book amazing. It does. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Rob Walsh. Okay, Rob, let's talk about that book now, The Winning Playbook, subtitled Strategies for Life on and Off the Field. Since you worked this with an NFL player, obviously on and off the field, and it really is the kind of things that regardless of what you're doing, whether it's football or business or family or whatever, there are questions you need to ask, right?
Correct. It was the book was built more of an empowerment book where a lot of books will tell you what to do, but they don't tell you the actual, like, here's the questions you should ask to identify if this is the right person or is this even in my best interest?
And that's what we all need. We all need some idea of the questions we need to be asking ourselves and our situation before we move forward. And my questions may be totally different than yours or somebody else's, right?
Correct. I mean, if you take a look at the book, there's a lot of it. I mean, this has been over 2.5 years now because the publisher reached out to me because they saw what we were doing with, you know, some of the athletes. And that was a transition 5.5 years ago is coming out of San Jose, just being in, just naturally getting into there because somebody said to me, my friend plays with the Dallas Cowboys, but he's got a job. I was like, how's that happen? Right. So I ended up meeting Jonathan probably 2 months after that. And Jonathan, you know, he has a national championship at UT with, you know, like Vince Young, these guys, probably one of the best teams in college sports in history. And, you know, he ends up playing 10 years in the football league. His dad played with Namath. So he knew a little bit and didn't come out broke, but he was an offensive lineman. So he didn't have like Tom Brady money. But anyways, I was kind of going through and I'm not going to tell him what to do. I was just saying, hey, you know, what do you know? And he opened up all his NFL stuff. And I was like, found out you can't touch any of your stuff until you're 45, which nobody plays until they're 45. And, you know, it's just the injustice of it, right? And people don't know. So like picking an agent, well, this is on the sports level, picking an agent, you know, it's a very parasitic community. And Lee Steinberg and Chris Cabot, Chris contributed to it. And I was asking him like, hey, what questions should somebody ask? And Jonathan gave his feedback. But the questions in the book that are particular to pretty much anybody, there's a lot of chapters within there about life, you know, business mindset, about money. And like, you know, somebody has an advisor. Why do they have an advisor? Well, what's advisor taught you about your stuff? You should know how money actually works, not just take somebody's word for it.
Well, yeah. And again, it can be your work. It can be a life hobby. It can be moving. It can be a lot of things that you need to make decisions about, and you need to know how to make a wise decision, right? That's how I read the book.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to put, you know, I mean, the best example is like, you got a job and you're going to put money into a 401k. Why are you doing it? Well, you know, it's a retirement plan, right? Well, there's questions you should be asking because you have a non-securities licensed person at the HR department handing you a piece of paper to sign up for it. That should, number one, be illegal. So, you know, because you have no clue, like you jump into it and I don't know how many people over the years, but like, they don't look at it. And then they don't know the fees. They don't know what's in there between 14 plus fees that could be distributed to them maybe, or part of them. And they don't know anything and they don't check in on it. And you could have lost 10 grand. And I'm thinking like, how long did it take you to save 10 grand? Right. And then they think like, well, it's a retirement asset. I'm like, well, what makes a retirement asset? Right. And there's different ways, questions you should be asking about certain things. Like, they're all mutual funds. Do you know how mutual funds work? You have a, you know, financial advisor. Has a person ever taught you about any of it? Or are they just telling you, I'm going to handle this, and they drop it into mutual funds and then they don't control those? That's just, I mean, your money is hard earned. Same thing like military people in general, they have discipline. They've got, you know, they're in it as a team. They really have put themselves before others, right? And they have a better ability to get into business than anybody. Right. And they could really do well, but they just need direction or mentorship, and they've got to, but they don't know what questions to ask per se. And while you're in the military, you should be asking the questions about what's beyond this. And then also too is, what about my money? What should I be doing with it?
You know, I never asked those questions when I was in the military. So that's the reason why I think this book, The Winning Playbook, is something that everybody should read, regardless of where you are in life. Rob, how can listeners buy a copy of The Winning Playbook?
The easiest way right now is it's on pre-sale right now. It goes out August 16th. You can go to yourwinningplaybook.com if you want. So Y-O-U-R, play, you know, yourwinningplaybook.com. And they have a link in there as well. Or you can go to Amazon. Amazon has it. Target has it. Barnes & Noble has it. It's across all major distribution channels.
Well, I certainly recommend it. Rob, thank you. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. And thank you for what you're doing now. I appreciate you, brother.
Absolutely, Denny. Thank you for having me on.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll meet Navy Captain and Gold Star Dad Lee Vincent. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show retired Navy Captain Lee Vincent. I joined Barry Law for their celebration for Memorial Day in Omaha, Nebraska. And while there, I met Lee, and we just could not talk to each other. You know how veterans are when they meet. They just got to get together, and we did. So welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Lee. Glad you could join us.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity of being here.
Lee, you're a retired Navy captain. Why did you join the Navy? What'd you do? How'd you serve?
It's amazing because I lived in rural Mississippi, and in World War II, I had an uncle that was a chief boatswain mate in the Navy, and I remember him coming home, and it struck me that I knew I was going to go in the Navy. I didn't know how long I was going to stay, but I had that goal from that very day.
You know, isn't it amazing how those things happen? I don't even know how I decided to pick the Army. Nobody in my direct line had ever been in the military. They'd all been cops.
Yep.
So I just knew one day I had to be in the Army.
And no one in my family had been in the military except for my uncle. What a start.
Okay. How'd you get in?
I enlisted in the Naval Reserve on my 17th birthday. I was still in high school. I was supposed to go on active duty 1 year later. I started college. And back in those days, if you were in college, you got a deferment year to year.
Yep.
I wound up getting into the Reserve Officer Candidate Program, which would lead to a commission once I graduated from college. And when I graduated, that's when my naval career came forth.
And you stayed on active duty for a while, then you got out.
Stayed on for 3 years, got out. I guess I wanted to try and see what the outside world was like. And 2 years later, I realized I needed to go back in the Navy.
What did you do during your first 3 years?
I served on board an amphibious ship, carrying Marines to the Med, down south to Cuba, things like that.
Okay. And when you came back in, what did you do?
I became the commanding officer of the Navy Reserve Center in South Charleston, West Virginia.
That's a little different, isn't it?
That's a big step.
I guess everybody thinks that if you're in the Navy, you're on a ship all the time. And one, that's not true.
No,
but
that's not.
Two, there's lots of jobs, aren't there?
It's a myriad of tasks and responsibilities and jobs.
There was a song I heard once, the man behind the gun. There's a lot of men and women at work behind any particular person that's behind any kind of a gun, from a naval ship to artillery to pistols to rifles.
That's exactly right. The support organization is huge.
It is, but we sure need them. So how long did that last? You stayed for a whole career at that point.
I went back in 71 and stayed through 1994.
Okay. All of that job?
Oh, no. I changed jobs every 3 years or every 2 years.
What was one of your favorite other assignments?
I enjoyed all my sea duties. I really did. And I wound up serving on a submarine tender, nuclear-powered submarine tender, and another amphib, the USS Guadalcanal, that carried Marines and helicopters and did all kind of things. We were deployed 18 months out of 24.
Okay, so you weren't bored. Well, how busy do you stay on a ship when you're on it 24/7, 365.
You stay busy about 18, 19 hours a day. There are things happening that require you to be awake, to be responsible, and be ready to respond to whatever the conditions are.
Well, I believe you. And I was only at sea on a submarine one time. I don't remember why I was on this, but I found everything above the deck at the height of my forehead. I banged my head into about everything. I think we were at sea about 4 hours or something.
We call those head knockers, or either the knee knockers that get your knees.
This is Colonel Danny Gilman, Frontlines of Freedom, and we're talking with retired Navy Captain Lee Vincent. Lee, your military career in the Navy, you had a son in the Marines.
I did.
Talk to us about him, since you're now a Gold Star dad.
That's right. I had two sons that went on the military. One of them, first one went into the Navy and went into the Seabees. Then Wayne, our youngest son, went into the Marine Corps. He was the one that selected that. And I had a long talk about it.
Well, you know, you want to guide your kids, but you want them to be adults and make their own decisions.
That's right.
And live with them.
That's exactly right. And that's what I did with Wayne. I finally told Wayne, son, if that's what you want to do, you need to go do it. Because if you don't, you'll always wonder what I would have done had I gone into the Marine Corps and come out.
But as my mother used to say, do what you do, do well, boy. Don't go in there half-baked.
That's exactly right.
So what was he doing? What was his career?
He was an assault man. Carried all those special weapons, smalls, all that kind of stuff. Fired rockets. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And obviously, he deployed at least once. How many times did he deploy?
Wayne was killed early on in his Marine Corps career. He was only did one deployment and only was into it about 2 months.
It must be really hard to get the word that you've lost someone, particularly your own child. And you'd know because you had to notify people before back when you were on active duty, right?
I did. I covered half the state of West Virginia back during the Vietnam crisis. And I notified quite a few families that they had loved ones that had passed.
That had to be horrible, but it couldn't be as horrible as getting notified yourself.
You're right. I don't think any of us ever realize as a CACO how much we are affecting someone's life. I don't think you make that connection until it happens to you.
How could you?
You don't have an opportunity. You don't want the opportunity to learn. That's what it is.
That's very true. I guess it's like being in an automobile accident. You don't ever want to be in one, but you don't know what it's like until.
You're right. Until you experience it.
That's it. And I have, and I don't want another one.
No, I haven't, and I don't want one.
That makes sense. Talk about Gold Star families. What's it like? How do you stand together? Because Gold Star families do stand together, don't they?
They absolutely do. We have a bond. Let's say this. We're members of an organization that nobody wants to be a part of. But like the military families that we all are, Gold Star families have a bond that I'm going to say nobody else understands.
How could they?
That's right. And we can talk, we can sit, we can laugh, we can cry. We go through all those emotions when we get together. It's amazing that the bond that we form with each other.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there are quite a few Gold Star families, aren't there?
There really are. I looked at the wall at the exhibit this morning and found my son. I found another young man from Gainesville, Florida, where I'm from, that was killed 9 months after Wayne. And I reached out to that family immediately as soon as I knew their son had been killed. And we are close friends now.
Well, people who have served, who have worn the uniform and have served honorably, are a family.
Yes, sir.
We used to say brotherhood, but now there's a lot of women involved into it.
Absolutely.
And they are certainly included every bit of the way.
Yes.
But there's a special branch too, isn't there? The Gold Star families.
Yes.
And those are some active duty people, some of them military, many are not.
Correct.
But they're every bit part of their own family, and they're certainly part of the military family too, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yes, it is.
Wow. Lee, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our country on active duty, in working with Gold Star families when you were in the notification business, in being a dad who lost a son in service, and in serving now through Gold Star families. Oh, I'm proud to call you a friend. Thank you for joining us.
Well, Danny, I want to thank you for your service too.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Army veteran Steve Rainwater and his interesting job. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do just a dozen with each arm, twice. Then take a break to stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At helpvet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at helpvet.net. Visit helpvet.net for all your family's needs.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Marine Vet Skip Coriel. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's a pleasure to welcome Army vet Stephen Rainwater. He served a while in our Army and now runs his own business. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, Stephen.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Good to meet you. How are you?
All right. Hey, I'm doing fantastic. Now, Stephen, tell us about your time in the Army. What was your service like?
Yes. So I went to Fort Benning, Georgia for basic training back in 2012. So I'm kind of one of the younger. I went for the MOS 15 Tango, which if you don't know what that is a Black Hawk mechanic / crew chief. Mm-hmm. I graduated there in 2013. And at the end of 2013, I was sitting in a nice little desert place called Afghanistan.
Well, thank you for your service. So how long were you there in Afghanistan, Stephen?
The first time I was there for 9 months, mm-hmm. and then back home, I was stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and then we were there right when they were doing the downsizing towards the end of 2014-ish. I ended up transitioning to the reserves for a couple months, and then I came back because the route that I wanted to take was not currently available during the downsize stuff. So I actually went back active duty under 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment.
Ah, okay. All right. So you fixed, maintained Black Hawk helicopters. Is that a good summary or too simple?
Yeah, that's a little bit more complex than that. Because once you start kind of going up in the ranks and getting more experience, you actually have the opportunity to crew in the back. So you get to fly around it.
Oh, wow. You know, when I was in the service, you know, the most that we had there, because this was back in like the 1970s, early 80s, were the old Hueys. But I never got to fly in a Blackhawk. I think I would have enjoyed that a lot.
Oh, yeah. They're fun. They have their ups and downs, just like all the other ones. But they're definitely fun. We were the guys in the back, like especially overseas. We manned the M240 Bravo machine gun.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, thank you very much for your service to our country, Stephen. Now, Stephen, what kind of things are you doing now? I mean, you left the service in what year?
I left active duty in 2018, transitioned to the National Guard. So now I'm currently in the Michigan National Guard as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. And you're enlisted ranks or commissioned?
Enlisted. I'm actually going through the commission program right now to be an officer.
So. Oh, that's awesome. Well, I hope that works out well for you, Stephen. All right. Well, Stephen, what are you doing right now? Because obviously you're in the National Guard, but you have a day job. What are you doing?
Yeah. So my wife and I, we moved back to the west side of Michigan. We grew up in a smaller town, Howard City, a little bit north of Grand Rapids.
Sure. Yeah.
And we wanted to try to give back. So we opened up a virtual reality teen center. We specialize in helping teens kind of get as many opportunities as possible. And one of the big ones right now is through video games and esports and all the electronic sports that they can handle. We work with a lot of local colleges to try to get them full ride scholarships when they turn 18. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our primary focus now, is to really kind of help keep teens off the streets and keep them engaged in things they like and create a safe place that they don't have to worry about all the craziness of life just yet.
Well, and there is no shortage of craziness in life out there right now. It seems like You wake up in the morning and you think, well, it can't be any crazier today than it was yesterday. But then you look at your cell phone and go, wow, this is a crazy day. So I'm glad you're doing that, Stephen. So the virtual reality, like video games, things like that, you are in a realm that is foreign to me. So tell me a little bit more about how this whole virtual reality gamer thing works.
Yeah, for sure. So we do virtual reality. We also do regular gaming on computers. The virtual reality side is kind of what intrigues a lot of people, because you basically walk in, you put a headset on, and it's got the screens in front of you, and you can actually see the games all the way around you. You can interact with them. Some of the more popular ones are kind of like a game like Onward, which kind of appeals more to veterans. It's a military simulator. So you're trying to take out the other team, and you're just trying to send the communications upward. And it's really awesome experience if you've never tried it, just because it gives a whole definition to interaction and it kind of takes it to the next level.
Wow. So you are truly on the cutting edge of computer evolution then.
Yep, we try to. We carry everything from, you know, like the regular virtual reality stuff to, we even got some of that new upcoming technology where you can strap yourself in on one of these treadmills and you kind of run around. Mm-hmm. Wherever you run around in the game.
Wow.
Yep. And then the haptic feedback suits are kind of the new ones too. So like, if you get shot in a game, it actually vibrates where you got shot and things like that. So.
But you don't feel actual pain and there's no blood, correct?
No, correct. There's none of.
Well, I think there's a limit to how real I want my game to be, Stephen.
Absolutely. It definitely is a good experience.
Well, this does intrigue me simply because I teach combat handgun tactics. And boy, I can see, you know, something like this would be very useful in training for perhaps real life, you know, combat scenarios and things like that. I know they have things like that, but they tend to be very expensive. Do you have any window into something like that that might be helpful for my, pistol combat students?
Yeah. So we have a couple of different things. They're mainly geared towards kind of the competitive side of video games, mm-hmm. which I think may kind of be up the alley. They're kind of like virtual reality training simulators where you actually have like pistols and stuff, and they try to match the recoil as best as they can. Obviously, it doesn't match it fully to the real life, but it helps with your aiming. It helps with your coordination and all of that as well. So it really tries to make it the best experience as possible.
Well, it certainly is going to be a lot more helpful and a lot more realistic than just standing out on the pistol range and firing at a paper target. It's not moving. You're not moving. And that's not the way combat works. In combat, you're drawing, you're moving, you're shooting, there's stress, it's dynamic, it's constantly changing from moment to moment. And that sounds kind of like your games can simulate things like that.
I actually played it a little bit with some of the teams around here a couple days ago. You know, I tried to have to brush off some of the experience that I learned in the Army. One of the big things they also try to simulate that it shocked me a little bit was not just the guns, but the simple things from like flash grenades. Like when you actually get hit with one of those in the game,
yeah.
It turns everything white and happening in your ears for a little bit and you can't see anything.
Oh,
so
wow.
they really try that environment into it. But if you have a lot of PTSD, we definitely don't recommend it because it tries to.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So what are the limits of this type of technology? Is it still building? Has it peaked? Where's the future of this?
I think right now it's just now hitting its stride. It's kind of coming to the mainstream market in the last few years, especially since Facebook, the social media giant, decided to acquire one of the main competitors in virtual reality. So a lot of it's actually going mobile now. They have mobile headsets where you don't need to be attached to a computer. And those are starting to really take off as well and try to bring that realism graphics and stuff to every single person. And I see the future as being more everybody's kind of like that movie Ready Player One, where everybody's kind of in their own little worlds, but they're interacting through the internet and online through different games. Mm. And that's kind of the direct virtual reality is pushing. So it's very interesting to see where it's going to go with the next iteration or the next generation of virtual reality headsets. But it's very exciting for sure.
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's like a whole new world. Now, Stephen, you're helping out the youth of our country when you're doing this. You're keeping them off the streets. If there's a parent out there listening right now and they go, you know what, I've got a kid, I want them to head in a better direction. Maybe something like this gaming thing might help them out. How can parents get a hold of you? Or maybe if there's a teenager listening, how can they learn more about what you do?
Yeah, so we're right here in the Grand Rapids area. But if you want to kind of find us more online, just go to totalrealityvr.com. And that's our entire website. You can kind of see what's going on. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, kind of as many of the social medias as possible. One of the coolest things that I think kind of sets us apart, though, is that all of our esport programs, our mentorship programs are 100% free, minus the cost of a jersey every year. They're all funded small businesses that really we've aligned with that help push, you know, our mission and our values along with theirs as well. So we really take pride in trying to help as many kids as possible. And we don't want financial obligations to be that factor that they can't be here to help, you know, for us to help.
Well, that is fantastic, Stephen. So that is totalrealityvr.com, totalrealityvr.com. Well, hey, Stephen, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today, and especially for your service to our nation, because it's ongoing. You are still serving. That's fantastic. You know, the best of luck to you in your future endeavors in the Army National Guard. And man, I hope that someday I have to salute you, Stephen.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's one of the reasons I did that. Was and help the lower enlisted and help them grow as well. So I'm always been trying to help as many people as possible. I appreciate you taking your time today to really have this conversation with me.
Troops, if you're a veteran who is having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at PTSDlawyers.com. That's PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Marine Vet Skip Coriel. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want you Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Peter, a military veteran, really appreciated everything about helpvet.net.
Peter, you're right. That's an organization that's there to help the military community. They're awesome people.
And Sue Ellen, a Gold Star mom, really appreciates the way our show, Front Lines of Freedom, supports Gold Star families.
Sue Ellen, I can't imagine losing a child in the service of our country. My thoughts and prayers go with all Gold Star families. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, on August 18, 1812, during the War of 1812, returning from a cruise into Canadian waters, Captain Isaac Hull's USS Constitution of the fledgling U.S. Navy encountered British Captain Richard Dacre's HMS Herrera, about 750 miles out of Boston. After a frenzied 55-minute battle that left 101 dead, Herrera rolled helplessly in the water, smashed beyond salvage. Dacre struck his colors and surrendered to Hull's boarding party. In contrast, Constitution suffered little damage and only 14 casualties. The fight's outcome shocked the British Admiralty while it heartened America through the dark days of the War of 1812.
And we really needed to look good since the British invaded and occupied Washington, D.C. during that time, too. That was a great win. And on 15 August 1845, the U.S. Naval Academy was established at Annapolis, Maryland, on the site of the former Fort Severn.
I think they did that just so that they could play Army in the Army-Navy game, Colonel.
Well, that could well be. They certainly needed some good foundation.
And on 15 August 1945, World War II gasoline rationing in America ended on this day. Rationing was just one of the special measures taken during wartime. Civilian auto production virtually ceased after Pearl Harbor as our automotive industry turned to war production. Automotive firms made $29 billion worth of military materials between 1940 and 1945, including Jeeps, trucks, machine guns, carbines, tanks, helmets, and aerial bombs. After the war, rationing ended and the auto industry boomed.
You know, the whole nation was at war then, not just the military. Rationing and all that kind of stuff. If we go to war again, we should make Congress declare war and the whole nation go to war. Okay, on August 15th, 1945, the Japanese surrendered, ending the fighting. This is called VJ Day for victory over Japan. Since the Germans had surrendered in May, World War II was over. A two-day holiday was proclaimed for all federal employees. The formal surrender would take place on the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay on September 2nd.
And on August 16, 1945, as World War II ended, Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright, who was captured by the Japanese on the island of Corregidor in the Philippines, was freed by Russian forces from a POW camp in Manchuria, China. When President Franklin Roosevelt transferred General Douglas MacArthur from his command in the Philippines to Australia in March 1942, General Wainwright assumed command of all Philippine forces. He moved his troops to the fortified garrison at Corregidor. Wainwright's 13,000 troops held out for a while. Finally, exhausted, they surrendered on May 6. Wainwright spent the next 3.5 years as a POW in Luzon, Formosa, and Manchuria. Upon Japan's surrender, Russian forces in Manchuria liberated him. The man who had been nicknamed Skinny was now emaciated. His hair had turned white, and his skin was cracked and fragile. He was also depressed, believing he would be blamed for the loss of the Philippines. When Wainwright arrived in Yokohama, Japan, to attend the formal surrender ceremony, General MacArthur, his former commander, was stunned at his appearance. Wainwright was given a hero's welcome upon returning to America, promoted to full general, and awarded the Medal of Honor.
He had a tough situation taking over the Philippines when he did. I respect that man. On 15 August 1961, 2 days after sealing off free passage between East and West Berlin with barbed wire, the East German authorities began to build a wall, the Berlin Wall, to permanently close off access to the West. For the next 28 years, the heavily fortified Berlin Wall stood as the most tangible symbol of the Cold War, a literal iron curtain dividing Europe. The end of World War II in 1945 saw Germany divided into four Allied occupation zones. Berlin, the German capital, was likewise divided into occupation sectors, even though it was located deeply within the Soviet zone. The future of Germany and Berlin was a major sticking point in post-war treaty talks, and tensions grew when the U.S., Britain, and France moved in 1948 to unite their occupation zones into a single autonomous entity, the Federal Republic of Germany, West Germany. In response, the USSR launched a land blockade of West Berlin, attempting to force the West to abandon the city. However, a massive airlift by Britain and the U.S. kept West Berlin supplied with food and fuel, and in May 1949, the Soviets ended the blockade. In November 1989, faced with growing demonstrations, East Berlin guards opened the borders, and jubilant Berliners climbed on top of the Berlin Wall, painted graffiti on it, and removed the fragments as souvenirs. The next day, East German troops began dismantling the wall. In 1990, East and West Germany became formally reunited.
And on August 18, 1965, during the Vietnam War, after a deserter from the 1st Viet Cong Regiment had revealed that an attack was imminent against the U.S. base at Chu Lai, the Marines launched Operation Starlight in Quang Ngai Province. In this, the first major U.S. ground battle of the Vietnam War, 5,500 Marines destroyed a Viet Cong stronghold, scoring a resounding victory. During the six-day operation, ground forces, artillery, close air support, and naval gunfare combined to kill nearly 700 Viet Cong. U.S. losses included 45 Marines dead and over 200 wounded.
I guess they weren't expecting anybody to kick back really hard like the Marines did. And on 18 August 1976, two U.S. Army officers were killed in Korea's demilitarized zone as a group of North Korean soldiers wielding axes and metal pikes attacked U.S. and South Korean soldiers. Major Arthur Boniface was attacked and beaten to death by North Korean soldiers as he attempted to cut down a poplar tree in the DMZ. That must have been horrible to watch. I'd be tempted to start shooting.
Yeah, I remember when that came out, Colonel. I heard that in the news.
Well, and that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
Well, all of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, the Alameda County Coroner's Bureau on Monday identified two drivers who were hit and killed on Interstate Highway 80 in Berkeley over the weekend after they left their cars to argue about a crash. Michael Bernardo, 46, of Hercules, and Kendare Alumna, 28, of San Pablo, were driving cars involved in a collision about 1:30 a.m. The two drivers got out of their cars to argue, along with a female passenger riding in one of the cars, according to the California Highway Patrol. They were standing in lanes of traffic when they were hit and killed by a Mini Cooper that had swerved to avoid the wreck. The two men died in the scene, and the female passenger was hospitalized after she was hit by debris.
Thanks, Colonel. This event is incredibly sad, not just because two men died, but because their deaths were completely avoidable. It's obvious that two grown men should know better than to stand in a traffic lane, and in reality, both these men probably did know better. But the root question here is this: what caused them to do a stupid thing that resulted in their deaths? Let's examine that now, because it really is a matter of life and death. A great many deaths in America could have been avoided. So let's look at a few reasons why people do stupid things they would normally never do. First, drugs and alcohol are wild cards. There is no indication in this incident that either man was drinking. However, it's a very common reason why people make poor decisions resulting in death. When people drink or take drugs, they don't get smarter, they get dumber. Their reaction time goes down, they lose their natural inhibitions, and their ability to make good decisions is reduced. Both drugs and alcohol are mind-altering substances. So when you consume these substances, then you are no longer in a right state of mind, and you tend to do things that you wouldn't normally do. For instance, like standing in a traffic lane during rush hour. I'm not saying you should never drink. I'm saying you need to decide before you drink how much consumption is wise, and then stick to that decision. Because decisions made after consuming drugs and alcohol are rarely superior to decisions made while sober. Second, and this is more likely to be the overriding factor in today's story, be very careful that you don't let your ego get the best of you. It's never a good idea to argue with another person simply because many murders are preceded by a verbal altercation. Tempers flare, unwise words are said, and then punches fly and the guns and knives come out. Or in this case, you get run over by a Mini Cooper, all because you let your emotions have control over your better judgment. All of us need to be making our best decisions with sound minds, especially in a society that is stressed to the breaking point. $5 a gallon gas and painful inflation right after a pandemic tends to make all of us on edge and shortens our tempers. But I'm here to tell you that arguing with a stranger will not lower the price of gas or solve your financial problems. When you find yourself in a tense situation, the smartest things you can say to a stranger are words of kindness. Try to remember that life is rough for them too. If you can de-escalate, then do so. If you screwed up, then apologize. Some things are worth dying for, but your ego is not one of those things. So if you want to live a long and healthy life, then stay in your right mind and don't let your ego make decisions for you.
That makes way too much sense. The movie of the month is The Paperboy. You can get it on the Front Lines of Freedom website. Go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week at Front Lines of Freedom, retired Navy Captain Tom Burke will discuss challenges our military faces. Then Jeff Breslow will discuss his book, A Game Maker's Life, and we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.